Contest of Champions, episode number 32, Emma Frost and Invisible Woman versus Iron Fist.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Welcome back, comic book fans, to the second action-packed season of the Contest of Champions Live. For those long summer nights, gazing at the stars, sipping on lemonade, and listening to the crickets sing their song, why not tune in to Contest of Champions to hear all about which superhero smashes the other one in the face? Here we are with the 12th fight of season 2 in the 32nd episode under our belt since we've gone live. Thank you to both listeners and competitors for helping us make this the most exciting comic book podcast on the internet.
And as always, returning this week are your COC Live hosts with the most, myself, the clobbering clergyman, Jeff Jackson, and my Canadian cape killer friend, Mr. Ian Johnson. How are you doing, Ian?
Very good. Thank you, Jeff.
Awesome. Joining us this week, a competitor who loves the flea card more than anyone else in this competition, Infinite Speech.
Good evening.
He's just going to let that one go. And
yes,
his opponent, the guy who has already written Marvel 616 letters about how he would be the perfect person to play Thanos in the upcoming Avengers sequel, Mr. Eli Anthony.
Hey, everybody.
How's everybody doing? Good week?
Very good week.
Good week.
Entertaining, if nonetheless.
All right. Very good. Very good. Well, as is our typical format, we jump right into the comic news. So, Ian, we got any news this week?
Yeah, I picked up two little items that I thought I'd mention. One's a kind of a feel-good story. Marvel's been inspired to use their comic book medium to try and make a difference in one young boy's life. 4-year-old Anthony Smith is a hearing impaired young man and having a really difficult time right now wearing his hearing aid at school. He kind of feels as though it's made him stand out a bit much, and his mom, I guess, has been having a really hard time getting him to put in his hearing aid, but he really needs it. So Smith's mom, knowing that he's a big comic fan, emailed Marvel about her son's reluctance, and in turn, they went and created a superhero for Anthony. The superhero's name is Blue Ear, and he's a hearing-impaired superhero who uses an Iron Man-like device to create supersonic hearing. That's his power. And Blue Ear's alter ego is Anthony Smith. So they actually made this superhero is this little boy. So Marvel also teamed up this new superhero with Hawkeye, who himself has a history with hearing impairment. So turns out that Anthony now is more proud than ever, of course, of his hearing aid. And his superhero alter ego, and now he's not only does he wear his hearing aid to school, but he shows it off. So, nice little gesture by Marvel.
That's great. That's really good to hear that Marvel is doing some positive things. But I didn't know Hawkeye really has hearing problems.
Yeah, I think it was when he was with the West Coast Avengers that
yeah,
it came
I was just
out.
Gonna say that I think it was West Coast.
Okay.
Yeah, they came out that he had some hearing difficulties and stuff, but had some, fancy superhero surgery and
right.
Had that taken care of. second thing I came up with for the news is back again about the Avengers movie. I went and actually saw it for the first time yesterday. thought it was great. But everyone knew that the Avengers was going to be a box office hit, but I'm not sure anybody could have predicted it would be as big as it actually is. As of this weekend, the superhero flick had amassed 27 cinematic records, including largest opening weekend and fastest movie to $500 million. And as of right now, the film has generated 1.2. Now, and you guys have to tell me if you think this number is absolutely crazy, because I double checked it, and this is what it says. It says that it's generated $1.2 billion globally.
That's crazy.
Wow.
I mean, that's
ridiculous.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, I'm not saying it's not doable or believable, but it is like ridiculous. I mean, they had over 200 million that first weekend when it opened overseas before it even got here.
So I don't know if that number's right or not, but if it is, that's like, holy cow. Yeah. Like, I don't. And I know, yeah, I heard some people saying that Men in Black was going to dethrone it this weekend, and Men in Black ended up doing something like, I don't know, 20 million or something like that.
Well, no, it is the number one movie this weekend, though.
Is it? Yeah.
Yeah, Men in Black did kind of like move it. But I mean, how long has Avengers been at the theaters?
Yeah.
So something was bound, you know, to knock it off the top spot.
I think if nothing else, this tells Marvel that they might want to consider closing up their comic book shop.
And no.
Just start making movies.
We need the books.
Well, of course we need the books. We need the books.
Yeah.
But, I mean, seriously, like, holy cow, if they keep making movies like that.
You know what else, though? Their digital comics numbers are on the rise right now, like in a big way.
Really?
Their sales of digital comics right now are way up. So if nothing else, you look at the movies, you look at the digital comics, I don't think it'd be too long before the paper goes the way of the dodo.
Yeah, maybe. That's awesome. Good for them, I guess. Yeah. Very good.
All right. So, previously on COC.
Last week we saw a great fight, which is in keeping with the current AVX arc, which is actually COC is better than the current AVX arc, in my opinion. The Kree warrior Novar, the Protector, managed by the wonderful Dan Brienne, faced off against the King of Atlantis himself, Namor the Submariner, who is managed by Tom McNeely. Now, Dan quickly took the fight to space and tried to capitalize on the environment of this fight, trying to pull the Atlantean as far away from his native environment as possible. Tom, on the other hand, relied on the fact that Namor is one of the heavyweights in the Marvel Universe, and basically in or out of the water. So this was the argument that they went through. And you can review all the back and forth banter that accompanied this alien versus fish throwdown. And you can go do that by going to comicattack.former.com and looking for the COC thread and looking for the Namor versus Protector thread in that forum. In that forum, the Comic Attack poll named Novar as the winner, with 71% of the votes to Namor's 29% of the votes. So I'm gonna go first, and I just have to say that I think that it is ridiculous that Novar the Protector has gotten any kind of credibility in this game at all. I think the guy is the biggest joke of a character ever, and there's no way that he could touch Namor ever in any kind of fight. Namor has long been underestimated in the COC competitions. He's basically seen as one-trick pony, but people forget that this guy has a list of people that he has gone through over the course of his history. He is one of the strongest, most durable characters in the Marvel Universe. He's defeated just about everybody. He's knocked out the Hulk, both in the water and away from the water. And so there was this big conversation about him being in space. You know, he's been in space before. He is not... he's still uber-powerful, even when he's out of the water. So I was leaning Namor already before I made my decision. But then Dan came on the forums, and I think he made the big mistake of posting an actual fight, an image of Namor an altercation between Novar and Namor in the cube, and Namor is clearly winning this fight. I don't know why Dan decided to post that. Now, he tried to then argue and backpedal and tried to, you know, say that, oh, well, he was being mind controlled and he was being in prison because he had, you know, tried to take over the world or something, whatever. And you know, first of all, the cube is nowhere near water. And so Namor easily took this scrub down. I mean, easily. And he's got the strength, durability, experience, fighting ability over Novar. And I don't buy the whole, well, just because he's on a space station that he's just automatically dehydrated or whatever. And I don't, honestly, I don't think he needs to go to a water supply in the, break open the wall and break open a water pipe and then start drinking water in order to be powerful. I think Namor can handle his own. He can absorb electricity. He can redirect that electricity. We forget about that power that Namor has. The guy's in the same league as the Hulk, in my opinion. Anyway, there's just no way somebody like Protector is going to take him down. That's my spiel, folks. Little love for the fish guy.
That's very good.
So right now we've got one vote for Namor, and we've got the poll saying Novar, and so Ian, it is down to you, my friend.
All right. Well, I think that Namor's a one-trick pony, and there's no water.
I knew you were going to say that.
No, this is a tough one for me, too. It's just like Iron Fist, Namor actually is one of my favorite characters. I love this character. I love his bravado. Love his power set. Love the fact that he's, knocked out the Hulk and stuff like that. With that being said, though, I think that he drew a tough match here. Jeff doesn't like Protector, it's not like I'm his, biggest fan or anything like that. I could, take Novar, take him or leave him. Doesn't mean much to me in the world of comics, really.
Ooh, he's triple jointed.
Ooh. He can spit on people and stuff.
So is Sierra Mist.
Yeah.
The thing.
Okay, sorry. Listen to the outtakes if you want to know what that joke's about.
The thing with Novar, I think that that kind of gets overlooked by everybody is that his main role with the Avengers right now is that he's a weapons specialist. That's his main role. Like, they want to travel in time or something like that. They say to Novar, we need to travel in time. He says, give me 3 minutes. You know what I mean? And he builds this little weird device on his arm, and all of a sudden they're all jumping through time, and he does that with guns and stuff like that constantly. He's it comes from his Kree background, right? He has this really, really advanced technological understanding of equipment and weapons and things like that. I think that works greatly to Namor's disadvantage, because my guess is, not like I've ever built a gun before in my life or anything like that, but if he can build time machines and different devices like that, his ability to build a gun that emits heat rays or, dehydrates people or blasts people with heat, it can't be that difficult, because most, laser-powered or plasma-powered or whatever-powered guns generally do that anyway. So I think that, that would be one of the very first things that he would do when knowing that he's going to be fighting against Namor. And they both appear on opposite ends of the Peak space station. It's a huge space station, and, it's full of technology. So he's going to have every single thing that he could possibly need to build the device he needs to take down Namor. And the big thing that kept coming to mind for me in space was I couldn't get that image of Namor when he was captured by the Skrulls during the Illuminati arc, and all they did is they threw him on this giant hot plate, basically. It was this red hot plate, and it just emitted heat to him the whole time. He was just laying there. He was dying, laying in this pile. There's no bars. There's no anything. Nobody's beating him up. He just couldn't handle the heat, right? He couldn't handle being sucked dry of all the moisture and stuff. So I agree. He doesn't need water in the environment. He's not going to have to bust open walls or anything like that. He comes powerful. He keeps his power. But I do also think that his Achilles heel is going to be heat, and I think that the Protector can generate that heat quickly.
Has Novar been shown to create a heat gun?
A heat gun?
Yeah, or whatever it is that you're
saying. The guy made a time machine in 3 minutes. You think he can't make a gun that emits heat?
See, I've seen him make guns.
So basically he's going to create a hair dryer. And point it at Namor and blow him to death.
That's all it takes.
That's what you're saying.
Well, I don't know if he's going to blow him to death, Jeff, but he
stop it.
it makes more sense than the alcohol in the pool that they use in the Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends episode, which ironically I watched the other day and laughed out loud because I thought of this fight.
I have not seen that. I need to go back and see
but
that.
But see, there's so many factors to me. Like, I can't see Namor winning this fight at all. I think that I know Peak Station is huge, but I think the Peak Station is huge as in the station itself is huge. It's still a space station, right? So it's still fairly compartmentalized. I know it's not small like our actual space station that we have floating in orbit right now. But, you know, out of all of the images that I've ever seen, the biggest room I've ever seen in that space station is a cafeteria where Lockheed's in there, you know, drinking a coffee or something stupid from that gay sword series. But Namor's the kind of guy, you know, more often than not, what you see Namor do is he takes to the skies and he drops this big, huge pile driver punch down on people. He's not going to be doing that in the Peak Station, right? So I think the environment really works well to protectors in his advantage, where he can go from room to room, hide, you know, seek out Namor while building stuff. The other thing that I think really helped me in this decision too is the fact that if you look at current continuity, every single appearance that Namor's been making, he gets his ass kicked. Every single appearance. It doesn't matter, you know, whether it's an X book, an AVX book, an Avengers book. It doesn't matter.
Okay,
what it is. Everybody's beating him up.
You're talking about that horrendous AVX versus book where the thing beats him up, and that's silly. That's just silly.
He had to be rescued by magic.
Ugh.
So anyway, on the other side of the coin, what's happening with Novar in books right now? Oh, I don't know. He's beating everybody up. He just single-handedly beat the Avengers. So, you know, for me, everything, if this is a scale, everything weighs in Novar's favor. So yeah, I'm voting protector.
All right. Well, there you go. So, despite Ian being wrong, Protector moves forward, and
Jeff, you know the pollers out there, they picked Novar.
Yeah.
You know, they're never wrong, our poll people. So,
well, that could be argued, but. That puts Dan at 3-1 and sitting pretty big and high in the competition, and that puts poor Tom at 1-3 with only Iceman and Professor X left, which is pretty good. He's still, you know, sitting pretty strong as we move on into the tournament. So. To learn more about the COC, go back and listen to all of our episodes thus far, and or by going to comicattack.former.com and look it up on the forum appropriately titled COC or Contest of Champions Live. Do we have a question, Ian?
Yeah, we have a couple of questions that have come from our number one fan, Decapitated Dan. The first question is, would you rather be a janitor at the Avengers Mansion, the X Mansion, and I guess for the X Mansion that could either be the Jean Grey Institute or Utopia, or on the Helicarrier.
Whew. So basically, would we rather be Jarvis or Toad, or Agent Coulson? Is really the question. I'm guessing that's what Coulson's job is in the Marvel Universe.
No, he's not.
Coulson is a very capable agent.
He's Fury's right hand man now.
Coulson is bad.
Okay.
He's alive and kicking.
That's right. Chill out, Jeff.
All right. Fine.
Phil is not to be disrespected.
Okay.
That's right.
Okay. Well, Eli, tell us where would you like to work as a janitor?
All right. Even though you know, I just said that about Phil. I wouldn't take the S.H.I.E.L.D. Helicarrier. I think it'd probably be boring. I would take the Avengers Mansion.
Wow.
Now, I know that it's always getting blown up and destroyed, but Jarvis never dies. And, you know, the cast changes, and I think there'd be more excitement there. Hmm. And it's right there in New York City. I mean, you know, when the Avengers are off doing their thing, you know, I'm chilling and hanging out in New York City. I think it's pretty good. And you get to go out drinking with Wolverine, right? So,
well, you get to do that either two out of three of these places.
Actually,
so.
Yeah, that's true. But still, it's Jarvis for me.
All right. Speech, how about you?
Yeah, I'm thinking of, first, I would I thought about the safety factor, so the helicarrier just went right out the window right there. Because it gets attacked, you guys are crashing, and that's it. So I would also pick the Avengers Mansion just because of the lineup. If I want to see an X-Men, hey, half the X-Men are Avengers anyway, so that's cool there. But you got eye candy.
Yeah.
And you're not being harassed by a bunch of kids at the Jean Grey Institute.
So what you're saying is that you would just step in and be like, oh, She-Hulk, sorry, I didn't know you were in here.
No, I wouldn't be a creeper. Okay. There's a difference there. There's a cool and subtle way to do that.
Okay. All right.
And a creeper will get a hole punched in you.
Right, right. Huh. All right.
I think that's just Pervy Dan who would walk in on She-Hulk.
I think that's what he said in the forum, I think. So,
brave man right there.
Let's see. I mean it's hard because Toad is really getting kind of he's having to clean up all the messes from Krakoa and all that stuff at the mansion right now. So I'd have to go with the Avengers Mansion as well. Just because I feel like Tony Stark treats his employees well. So
they have one hell of a Christmas bonus.
Yeah, well, I feel like there's a never ending. Like, I'm sure you would make more money being the Avengers janitor, because at Wolverine school they're like scrounging to find money, you know, and you know, all the time. So I would rather be Jarvis than Toad. So Ian, how about you?
Well, I'm the same with all of you guys with the helicarrier. That sucker's falling out of the sky like every third day, so there's no way I'd work on that.
Yeah.
And I'm with you with your rationale for the Avengers Mansion, but I'm going to take the Jean Grey Institute for the same reasons. I think mutant chicks are just hotter. they just dress more provocatively, and I think it'd be a great place to work. You know, just be sitting mopping, looking the whole time. That's, you know.
You'd be like, oh, dupe, sorry, I didn't know you were in there. Right? Yeah. All right.
What's that supposed to mean?
you don't like green blobby characters? Yeah. Anyway. All right. Do we want to do another one, or...
Eli, you shouldn't be laughing. You should see the kind of damage that happens when a double team gets taken out of this tournament.
Yeah, I know. I've caused it.
It's brutal.
Yeah, yeah.
That Iron Fist is a tough character.
All right. Well, do we want to do a second question, or we want to move on? Let's move on.
You want to move on? Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so, well, thanks, Dan. Anybody wants to send in questions or you have questions for us, go to the Ask the COCers thread in the COC thread on comicattack.former.com.
In the spirit of superheroes fighting superheroes, it is tradition for us on the show to pick a fight from this week's comics that we consider the highlight fight of the week. And I'm going to go first because I'm afraid that speech may have this one, so I'm going to try to steal it from him. My fight of the week comes from Amazing Spider-Man number 686, and it is the Spider-Man versus the Chameleon, really, but Chameleon is dressed up as Dr. Octopus. But what really kind of put me over the edge here was Spider-Man ending up convincing Mysterio to switch sides. I have to say, I love Mysterio. I think he's one of the best Spider-Man villains. I think he has the coolest little power set. I think you could do some really cool stuff with him. I'm surprised he hasn't been used in a movie yet, just because I just think he's kind of made for that. I mean, he's got the movie background. He does the special effects. He pulls off a big illusion in this issue with kind of the bombing and destruction of Simcaria, and which is this fictional place that Silver Sable's from. And but anyway, Spider-Man in the end, after he fights Chameleon dressed as Doc Ock, he ends up convincing Mysterio. He said, you know, basically, Doc Ock's plan is to burn up the entire world, and so where does that going to leave you? Where is that going to leave you in your $2 million or however much it is that Doc Ock has promised you? And Mysterio's like, yeah, you know, you're kind of right. So Mysterio ends up joining sides with Black Widow, Silver Sable, and Spider-Man, and then they end up at the end of the issue coming across the Avengers who have been brainwashed by Dr. Octopus. So we'll see what happens in the next issue. But yeah, so I like that whole – that was a great issue. So Eli, how about you?
That I love that one too. But mine, in fact, that's what I was going to choose. So I'm going to come up with the.
I stole it from you.
You stole it from me, probably me and Speech too, but that's cool. Secret Avengers was good, but I think I've done that one before. I'm going to go with All-Star Western number 9. I think that was this week.
Yeah, you can trust.
Yeah.
You can always trust that Ian and I are never going to pick a DC book for
right,
our Fight of the
right.
Week.
So
you and Tom lay claim to the DC book.
We have all of DC to choose from. That's
yeah,
great.
That's right.
That's great. There was a Batman book out this week, but I went away from it. And this All-Star Western is a Night of the Owls tie-in, but this fight that I liked was not Night of the Owls. There wasn't one of the Talons involved. There were these two. I've never read one of these All-Star Westerns before. I don't even know their names. But the redheaded chick. And the guy who, I don't know, looks like he could be an ancestor of Bruce Wayne, maybe. And they're taking down some crime lord, and they're in a cemetery, and they're fighting his guys off, and they leave one of them alive and able to go. Their plan is to let him go warn the guy that about what's happened, and then go, lure him into a trap later on just to get him riled up. And I guess there's been a flood. And they're in the cemetery, and they're like knee deep in water, and there's alligators. I don't know where the alligators have come from, but there's alligators. And so they scare the bejesus out of this guy. They like hang him upside down off of one of these crypts where he's just out of reach of the alligators. And they scare him half to death to ensure that he goes running to his boss. And so the boss is in the head of this parade, block party type thing. And apparently these two vigilantes have been chasing, they chase outlaws all over the Old West, and they've been chasing this guy for a while. And they come to his place, his house, later that night, and he's ready for them. He's got like all of his paid hired guns there, and they all kind of suffer from cowardice at the last moment and run off, and they leave the guy. And so these two outlaw hunters show up. And the redhead, she really wants to kill the guy. But the Bruce Wayne lookalike dude, I'm sorry, I don't even know their names, I'm sorry. But they, the guy disarms Lord pretty easily. And he reads him basically, what's going to happen to him, his charges against him, and they're going to take him in. And at the last minute, you know, they're burning this guy's house down. His whole life is over. They're carrying him off to jail. The guy's putting the handcuffs on him, and he snatches the gun out of the guy's holster. And the redhead, this guy has like killed her family in the past or something. She takes off her sheriff's badge, and as the outlaw is pulling the gun out of her partner's holster to fire at them, she flings the badge and cuts his throat, puts him down. And you know, it's kind of cliche. It wasn't the greatest fight, but. First time I've read this book, and the action was decent. I enjoyed it. I don't know that I'll buy it again, but
I want to know
that was a cool fight.
I want to know: has Batman ever been held upside down?
Yeah,
has he? Has he been held upside down over a alligator or a building, the side of a building? He needs to know what that feels like.
He's usually the dangler.
Well, that's what I know. He's usually the dangler. He's not the danglee.
I'm just saying.
Sometimes you need to feel. You need to be able to take what you can dish.
Batman can take it. All right. I know Batman is not very loved.
I think it would be awesome. I think it would be awesome to have somebody dangle him for once. Get a little taste of his own medicine. So,
hey, Jeff?
Yes, sir.
How is it that Eli's able to come on this show and say his fight of the week, right? And then he says, it wasn't that great of a fight. And then he says, I don't think I'm going to buy this book again. But that's his fight of the week.
Yeah, well.
Well, Jeff stole my fight of the week. It was a lean week.
Yeah, it was a lean week.
It was really a lean week.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, it was not a very good week.
And that Amazing Spider-Man was great.
Yeah.
That I will buy again.
Okay.
I got books all around me right now in case somebody steals my fight. I'm good to go. I got like some books.
Okay. All right, speech.
Half them are DC.
Really? Okay.
My book is, well, see, I think it's of a fight, but more of a, I don't know, just more of a confrontation. This, The Mighty Thor number 14. You got Donald Blake, who's trying to get his life back after he finds out that the Thor part was basically a lie. So he's basically making a deal with the Enchantress from last issue. So this issue, she loves him up all good and everything. You know, she gets him in the bed. She's all hot. And then he wakes up and she starts prepping him for what's going to happen. So she brings out like this golden apple, which is like the fruit of the gods. And I think he asked her, what am I going to have to do to get this power back? And, you know, she, like I said, she sexed him up the previous night because apparently he's about to go through hell after he eats this apple. So what it is, you know, she feeds him. He starts saying, oh, man, this is good. Then it's like back arches. He starts spitting up all this crap. And then she stands over him with like this huge sword and just starts hacking away at him. And then what we get on the last page is like his body is oozing this thick green liquid and she's holding his head as he screams no, watching his body. So that was just pretty unexpected and cool there. And it's probably going to bode a big problem for Thor later on. But I thought it was pretty just out of the ordinary and not your like average fight.
Is Donald Blake, I mean, is Thor still Donald Blake? I mean, is that...
No, Thor is Thor and Blake is Blake, and he wants like that part of him back.
Oh, okay.
So the Enchantress promised him, you know, I'll give you the power, blah, 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 blah. And then, like I said, the page, he's staring at his body as this thick gunk just oozes out of his neck, and it's like forming something, but they don't show it yet. But it's pretty cool. But that was about it. Like you said, you took my other one, which was the Spider-Man one. And the only other fight I enjoyed was something out of Aquaman. I know.
Wow. Speaking of fight of the week, my wife just showed me a headline on her iPad that says Florida police. So Eli, this may be you. Florida police kill naked man as he chews on another man's face.
My God.
It's always Florida. It's I know. Florida.
The crazies are in Florida.
And he's naked. I
mean, yeah, he's naked and he's a friggin' naked cannibal man.
Either one of those is notable, but a naked cannibal?
Yeah, I know. All right, Ian, sorry.
It's funny speech brings up the Aquaman thing. That was my backup fight, in case someone picked the one that I was going to pick. I was going to go with the Black Manta.
Yeah.
Yep. That was good with Prisoner. That was a good fight. But my fight is actually from Secret Avengers number 27 by Rick Remender. And it is with a newly resurrected, or at least what us fans are led to believe is a newly resurrected Captain Marvel. And he starts fighting the Secret Avengers. And most notably, it's the part of the fight that I like was him versus Thor. Marvel takes down Vision, and after he takes down Vision, then he goes straight after Thor and gives Thor one heck of a right hook. Enough so that Thor's bleeding out of his eye and his nose, and you know you don't see Thor bleed that often, and Marvel keeps saying to him, you know, you need to stay down, and then Thor goes into this huge speech about how, you know, how dare you take, you know, he doesn't believe that he's Marvel, so he says, how dare you take the face of you know, such a hero and someone who's, you know, so honorable and all this kind of stuff like that. And and then Thor just starts pounding him with his hammer. He's hitting him like he's a nail or something. He just keeps wailing away at him, and he says, seeing his proud face distorted in this way raises such a fury in my soul. And then he bashes his hammer into his face one more time. He says, I will smash his features from your skull. It's just wicked. Like, he's just, he is just pounding Mar-Vell's face.
There's a line in there that Thor says that is just so awesome, and I forgot what it was, but yeah, that was a good fight too. But there was a line like during that fight, like right around that part where he's, you know, he says, "I'm gonna smash his visage from your face."
What was it, the sorry part? Where Mar-Vell says, "I'm sorry for your predicament," and then Thor says, "Sorry, not yet, but it will come," and then he smacks him with the hammer.
But I know it comes from Thor. I'm gonna have to look at it again, because, and I'm wondering why I didn't pick up the book, because I thumbed through it and saw that part. I'm like, wow. And I noticed that, I remember Thor just got his ass kicked by the Phoenix, so I'm like, you know, would he have taken him if he was, you know, fully powered and everything?
Yeah.
See what you guys do? You got me thinking, who's going to take who no matter what I'm looking at?
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, ah.
Yeah, because Thor does end up losing that fight to Mar-Vell.
Yeah. Well, he just, I mean, to give him a little bit of credit, he just fought the Phoenix and lost, so.
Yeah.
But. Excuses.
Ah, no, yeah.
He can find a cup of water to drink.
Yeah. All right.
Okay, so after four good fights there, we're on to our main event. Tonight's fight features a double team of Emma Frost and the Invisible Woman, managed by Eli Anthony, taking on the champion of Kunlun, Iron Fist, managed by Infinite Speech. Speech was scheduled as the home team and determined that tonight's fight will take place in the Pacific port city of Madripoor. As of this fight, or after this fight, Madripoor has been removed from the main rotation and replaced with the famous Bar with No Name as a new environment. So if you want to come and see the more about the fighters and more about these environments, go to comicattack.former.com. Listen carefully to the podcast, as all the voting rules and game information will be listed right after the fight.
All right. We got a coin ready.
We got the Canadian dime. So on our dime, we have, of course, the queen is heads. And on the other side is the famous schooner, the boat.
Schooner. All right. Eli, are you ready?
Yeah. You know what? I'm taking the schooner tonight.
You're going schooner?
Yeah.
You should have gone queen, because you got the white queen. I'm just saying.
I was on the water today, though, so I'm going with... Okay. I think the queen let me down last time, too, so...
All right.
Uh-oh.
Okay, right. What is it?
Let's try it. It is schooner.
Oh, yeah.
All right, Eli, what do you want to do, Jeff?
I know.
Eli, you want to start, or you want to hand it over to Speech?
I think I'll start.
Ooh.
Yeah, I don't usually do that, but
he's confident.
What the heck?
Yeah, you don't. In fact, you usually complain about going first, so. So this is good.
All right. So, the thing starts off, and Emma will be in charge of two things right off the bat. Number one, telepathic communication between her and Sue. Number two, locating Danny. And right off the bat, both of these ladies make sure that nobody sees them as they turn invisible and then ascend above the ground, above the crowds and everybody, and silently and invisibly just float along towards Danny. And so Sue is making them both invisible and enabling them both to fly through the air with her invisible force fields, of course. And Emma is locating Danny. And they're not speaking because they're engaging in telepathic communication. So they're just having a nice flight there, and they find Danny. And Sue, now Emma could just try and attack him telepathically, but Sue is going to just have a little fun first. So Danny is in an Asian city here. Danny is right at home. He grew up in Kunlun. He knows how to fit in. Even though he's blonde, he he's an American looking, he's fine. He is at home in a place like this. But for a moment or two, unbeknownst to him, Sue makes him invisible. Just to throw him off a little bit. And so the crowds, the multitudes of people that are walking around, they don't see him, and they start to bump into him. And Danny, of course, is like, what's going on? What are you doing? And then Sue makes him visible. And, of course, Danny will realize that. His senses are tuned and peak and all that jazz. But it'll throw him off a bit. And at this point, you know, Sue and Emma are still invisible. They're still high above the crowd, high above Danny. Danny isn't going to have any way to tell where they are because Sue hasn't done anything with a force field to him yet. She just made him invisible for a few moments, and people started running into him because they didn't see him on the street. And then she can the fight can go one of several ways. Emma can telepathically attack him, or Sue can attack him with a force field. She can put him in a force field, which, of course, he can exert a lot of force with his iron fist punching and his chi attacks and all that. But Sue's control over her force fields is amazing. I mean, it's mind-boggling, some of the things she can do. And so one thing she does is she raises him up in the air in a force field, and when he goes to punch against it, she just gets rid of the force field, and she keeps it under his feet, but she gets rid of the side walls and the roof there, and so it's like he rears back to punch to try and bust out of it, and he hits air. And then, you know, say he sees an opportunity and he leaps, well, she just catches him again before he leaps to the ground. And she can control how much oxygen gets in. She's been shown in the past to do this underwater and have her force fields function like gills. And, you know, she could even leave a big opening in the top for air for him. Or a very simple thing, she can just choke him out without actually choking him with a force field, just suffocating him and making that force field airtight. And she can keep on expanding and contracting it so that he never connects with any of his punches or kicks against the wall. And he exhausts himself, uses up all of that oxygen, and makes himself go unconscious. And then she puts him back down, of course, because she doesn't want to hurt Danny. Emma, she's a little bit more evil, but, you know, they don't want to hurt him or kill him. And then that's it. And then they all, you know, they put him down in a nice hotel room somewhere or something, so he'll be safe until he wakes back up. And that's that. Or she gets him into a force field, and Emma, you know, plays around in his head a little bit. With now Danny is not an easy mark telepathically. I'm sure speech will bring that out, and I'm not going to say that he's, you know, that some low-level telepath like Monet or somebody would just be able to do whatever she wanted to his mind. But, you know, Emma's pretty skilled. And Danny has to worry about losing oxygen inside this force field to get out of this force field. And so, you know, he's fighting the battle on two fronts. His mind will be a little distracted, even with the focus that he can muster. There's just no way he can defeat both of these chicks. And with the force field and the invisibility, and with them being airborne, he has no offense whatsoever. You know, Sue and Emma can be attacking him from 10 feet away, from 100 feet away. So, and he can't see. So he really has no idea even where to direct a ranged attack if he had the opportunity. So I'll let that be that for now.
It's passed to me now.
It's you, Speech.
That hurt you a little bit, didn't it, Eli?
You'll never know how much, Jeff.
Well, before Speech goes, I just have to say, before the fight tonight, before the show tonight, I had posted on Twitter, so if Emma Frost teamed with Sue Richards, could they take out Iron Fist? And I asked Brian Michael Bendis and Jonathan Hickman and Kieran Gillen if they had any thoughts on that. And Kieran Gillen wrote back and he said, Sue and Emma are rich, so they could afford it. But Danny is also rich, so they may want to split the checks. And I realized what he was talking about when I said, could they take him out? So, anyway, just thought I'd throw that in there. So, go ahead, Speech.
So clever.
Yep.
I don't think Reed would stand for that. Nah. Cyclops would be too, but he's distracted, so Emma could get away with it. But
Reed's more worried that Namor is giving it to his wife.
Exactly. Well, so he ain't worried about Danny. So
see what should have happened. This should be Sue and Emma versus Namor.
How awesome would that have been?
And that guy would have I that would have been a good fight.
That wouldn't have been.
I should have campaigned for Neymar.
One of the most perverted fights in ever in history.
Yeah,
those comments would have not geared towards the type of fight that
Maybe it's better that didn't happen.
Yeah.
Maybe it's better.
All right, Speech,
all right,
go for it.
But back here. All right, I picked Madripoor for a reason. It's a highly populated island, and it's not the richest area. And we all know that the not so richest areas are usually densely populated with all these pirates, poor people, and whatnot. Danny knows the area very, very well. And unless Emma is packing around a portable cerebro unit, it's going to be a while before she's able to track him. So telepathically, with an iPad or a GPS anyway, it's going to be a while because she has to try to navigate through everyone's mind on the island. Danny is one of, I mean, it's overlooked a lot, but he is a very magical, mystical character. And he can utilize his chi to kind of block certain brainwave patterns, biorhythms, his heart rate, his mental state, all of that. So he can change, walk around freely. He speaks the language, so he'll be able to navigate pretty well. Now, I kind of had it set up to where the two would probably split up, but you want to keep them together, floating around in the air, invisible, fine. At any point, they're going to have to come down and face Danny. Now, I was unable to find anything of Danny being telepathically taken advantage of, controlled. Anything has always been done with extensive brainwashing, drugs, and all of that. And even at that point, his chi and the mystical part of him purges that. It's like in constant flux to purge that from his body. So I always think that that will be another layer of protection for him against Emma if they do meet up. She's going to have a hard time trying to punch through his psychic barriers. I mean, you got to remember, this is a man who was transported to a realm that would have killed any normal person in the New Avengers during that whole Eye of Agamotto thing. And Doctor Strange made it plainly clear, and even his master was shocked that Danny lived. They couldn't control him. They couldn't bend him to their will. And these are the sorcerers of the highest level that couldn't move this man's mind. So in the end, he faces Emma and Sue. Invisible or not, he's fought Sue invisible. He can, and I want to say it was Contest of Champions. I think in the first one, they just met, shook hands, and fought together. I think in the second one, they actually fought against each other. I think so. If I'm wrong, maybe Ian can correct me later. But from what I can remember is that there were certain – he was able to feel her attacks, invisible or not. This is a guy who fights blindfolded. He trains with weapons blindfolded. I mean, the Thunderer and Yui Tai, they trained him like that. So being blind and not seeing his opponent doesn't matter. He can feel the ebb and flow of like the shifts in the wind, in the air, and he's able to dodge and block and attack. And he used those very same techniques against the Invisible Woman. And even if he hadn't, I'm pretty sure he can use them here, and it's practical. I do feel that the White Queen would grow tired of trying to punch his mental defenses, so she'd have to revert to her stronger, more durable diamond form. And at that point, if she even attempts to go hand-to-hand thinking she can sucker punch Danny or anything, then it's a wrap, because he's going to find that weak point in her and basically punch the shit out of her, probably break a thing or two. It's very easy. I really don't think she'd be able to lay a hand on him, because again, he doesn't want to hurt either one. So even in her diamond form, he'd easily subdue her hand to hand, and he would have to charge up a bit. With Sue, I honestly think he'd go easier. I pretty much figured you tried the whole bubble thing and the whole asphyxiation thing. Danny can slow down his heart rate. He can fake death. He can also make it appear as to, you know, he's been knocked unconscious by Sue. They think they've won. He gets in close. Bam, bam, bam. Couple of nerve hits. She's out. She's paralyzed. She can't move. The same thing with the White Queen. If he chose to use his ranged attacks, they would be just for distraction purposes only. Because, again, being the guy that he is, he's not trying to wipe both of these women off the planet. At least with Sue, he's got a stronger relationship with. And I honestly think that him knowing the terrain a lot better than both of these women also gives him an advantage, because he can either travel underground, above ground. And I think there are certain, I think his company had certain holdings in Madripoor at another point. So him navigating the city and putting the word out that these two are there would also get back to him as well. Like I said, it's a really big island. I don't think the White Queen would be able to track him as easily as you made it out, unless she's packing a cerebral unit, which she know that we all know that she's not. So they're going to have to do this, you know, hand on foot, compared to a guy that's got eyes and ears all over the streets here, speaks the languages, and not only speaks it, but like I said, he spent time there as well in the past. So he's got familiarity with the environment. He can take out both opponents. Getting into his defenses is not going to happen from Emma, as strong as she is. Like I said, I was unable to find anything to where a telepath was able to keep him or even attempt to. It's always been of a magical nature. Neither of these characters have that ability.
All right, Eli.
Well, first off, there's no reason for them to walk around there and just on the street and look for him. I mean, that's ridiculous. They know how dangerous he is. He's probably one of the most dangerous men in hand-to-hand close combat. And as you said, Sue would know that intimate. She knows that. And if they're looking for her, especially if it's going to be more difficult for Emma to locate him telepathically, they're going to take to the air and they're going to be invisible. And I know Danny has, he can hear much better than a regular human, but he will not hear them silently floating, telepathically communicating with each other high above the crowd. He will not hear that and be able to see where they're at above the noise of the crowds. And
now, you're saying, you know, this. Hold on. This is a guy who can hear your heartbeat and you sweat. So
when he heard the sweat,
what does that sound like?
Completely. I don't know. You'd have to ask the Iron Fist, Daniel Rand. But when he heard the sweat, he heard the sweat on a girl who was creeping up from behind in the shadows in a completely empty room where the only sound was Danny and the girl. So this is
sounds dirty no matter what.
All right, it does. But this is it's different. All right. We both, you know, we all know Madripoor is a crowded city. It's noisy. All right. His senses will not trump Emma's telepathy as far as location goes. And they will not be enough to give him an edge in a fight to locate them in a fight because, you know, he's going to be pressed in on all sides by people walking around. And especially if he goes underground or inside of a structure, even less will he hear them silently hovering. And what's more, you know, just because he, you know, there hasn't been evidence of it, of him being messed with telepathically, doesn't mean that it can't happen. And that stuff that happened in New Avengers with the Eye of Agamotto and all that, those were magical entities that couldn't just command him to disappear. This is a different kind of attack. So whereas I'm not saying it's a slam dunk, because I haven't seen evidence myself as of yet of him being controlled telepathically, I haven't seen him resist an attack from a telepath like Emma or Xavier, you know? And why would they get close to him? You know, you said that they would have to get in close. There's no reason. That would be the stupidest thing anyone would do with Iron Fist. Both of these chicks have ranged attacks. While Sue is attacking him, she can be very far away and she can be moving. And even if Emma can't break into his mind so easily, even if it's a battle for her, that will take some of Danny's concentration and some of his effort, some of his mental ability and energy. And
right, and this is something that he's used to because why? Because Danny is always constantly fighting 10 to 15 guys while dodging bullets, dodging arrows, and not just arrows shot at him from some kid at summer camp. These are highly trained ninja from the Hand, from Hydra, whoever, and he's been attacked by 15, 20 men. So diverting that attention and being able to fight on multiple fronts is something he is not, you know, foreign to. So it'll be natural.
Correct.
Now, Sue attacking him from a distance through a crowd, that poses a few problems because either she may end up hurting an innocent or, you know, while she's navigating her wave of invisible bars or whatnot, he'll, like I said, you know, and before, he'll feel the shifts. He'll dodge and evade her. She could use the bubble trick, trap him in a bubble. He'll exert the force and get out. Period. Or
but the Hulk,
I mean,
the Hulk and Thing have had trouble with her force fields. And the another aspect of Emma is you say Danny has eyes and ears everywhere. Well, Emma actually has eyes and ears everywhere by means of all the people. Even if Danny is. It would be tough to make telepathically. The regular Madripoor citizen would not be. And so she can easily, which she has done before, look through someone else's eyes, just a regular Joe Schmo on the street. And another tactic she could use is while Emma is getting ready to do a giant – let's say a human being takes up like what, 4 square feet on the ground. Let's say Sue prepares – like a 100-square-foot bubble, all right? Emma has everyone telepathically attack Danny, everyone who's around him. I mean, she telepathically controls them and just has them attack Danny and jump on him. He's not going to hurt innocent people. They're no match for him. They're just regular people. And Emma wouldn't have a problem doing that. So he throws them off, and then Emma telepathically commands all of them to run away from Danny. And then Sue just raises up this force field that's as big as a house. And then it slowly contracts and lifts him in the air. Simple, easy, done. And she's kept out the Hulk. She's done battle with the Thing. I know Danny can exert some insane force with his chi and his iron fisting. But Sue can counter all of that.
Did you say iron fisting?
I did.
Yes.
Did you really
and
say
as
that?
As strong as the Hulk and Thing are, I've never
Shame
seen
on
him
you.
Crack a helicarrier or stop a nuclear train. Period. I mean, she can trap him in a bubble, and it doesn't even take him like all he doesn't have to sit and meditate all day to, you know, exert this amount of force either. He did it in a matter of seconds, and when he popped the helicarrier and crashed it, that enough force on her bubble won't only destroy the bubble, however, it'll send a bit of a backlash to her because she has to concentrate. And
all right, I'll do one better for you.
The thing with invisible people, Danny knows both of these women's powers intimately. He knows what they can and can't do. Sue being invisible really isn't that much of an issue because, I mean, and this may sound, you know, simple and cheap, kind of like the bubble, but there's nothing wrong. Danny is a crafty fighter, so grabbing like mud or dirt, flinging it at her, getting it on her so he has a spot to target exactly would work just as easy. It doesn't have to be flashy. But
how
now,
does he do that if she's 100 feet in the air and, you know, 30 feet down the street from him? He can't – he has nothing that he can do physically to her. And we've all seen the Avengers movie, right?
Yep.
When Thor was in that little killer cell that Fury designed and put Loki in, they designed for the Hulk, I guess, right? Mm-hmm. Loki drops Thor. Now, Thor is obviously strong enough to break out of that thing. But as it was tumbling – Thor couldn't do anything. All of his strength was nullified because he couldn't get any leverage. And as he swung at the wall that was 2 feet in front of his face, because that cage was tumbling, the wall moved away and he swung in the air. That's what Sue does to Danny. And yes, it is true that there is a psionic backlash, but Sue has Emma standing right next to her. Emma can go in Sue's mind, which she's already there. They're communicating telepathically. Emma is going to know full well what's going on. She's in her head. Emma braces her up. And Sue's done this for years. She knows what happens when a strong being punches her force field. So she does what that tumbling glass cage did to Thor. And only when, as it was about to hit the ground and Thor put his feet against one side and pushed off, was he able to break through. Well, as soon as Iron Fist does that, Sue expands or contracts the bubble. While all the while, she keeps it airtight and Danny's using up oxygen. Yes, he can slow down and he can trick people and make people think, but he can't hold out forever. He can't stop his need for oxygen.
Well, see, the problem with the whole bubble thing is that that was a one-directional attack, and I understood that as well. However, Danny can exert his power omnidirectional, so she's not just going to have one point of impact to look at. Okay, maybe his foot is going here, maybe his hands are going here. She's going to have to contain with him hitting the entire structure at once. That's going to hurt. It's going to pop. It's going to break. You know,
but Sue has done that with like with nuclear explosions and explosions that Sue, you've got to contain this. It's going to take out half of Manhattan. And Reed's like, Sue, you're the only hope. And she contains some ridiculous explosion. You know, when the blows are focused like a punch from the Hulk, it creates a backlash and it gets into her head and she has to brace up and concentrate harder. But an omnidirectional attack and an energy attack, because that's what his omnidirectional attack is. It's a chi attack. It's his energy. She's got no problem with that. That's like putting a torch in a bubble and just letting him flame on against it, or her absorbing the energy from an explosion, which she has done. And whereas Danny stopped that train that was carrying, you know, that maglev train in that was going to destroy Kunlun, it was carrying a nuclear bomb, but you know, Danny didn't exert that much force. He stopped the train.
When did Sue get energy absorption powers?
She didn't have energy absorption powers. That's the wrong word. Containment within the force field. That's a better word. All right, she didn't absorb it. Her force field absorbed the impact of that. You know what I'm saying is that energy attack and that such an omnidirectional attack is much different than something like a punch from Thor or the Thing or Hulk, where all that energy is focused into a concussive force on the force field. That's what causes the psionic feedback. And she knows that. She's done this for years. She's protected people from the Hulk. She's put powerful beings inside of force fields. She's completely owned her own team when she was under the whole Malice thing. And she's got Emma to back her up.
Okay, Speech, you get the last word.
Oh, man, this is over with already?
Yeah, I know. Well, no, it's not over because you guys both get to continue the discussion on the forums.
Yes, the lovely forums.
Yep.
All right, so Bubble notwithstanding, because I figure that would be like the fallback is to keep Danny in a bubble. I do feel he'd be able to pop it, even with Emma there backing her or not. He's coming out the bubble. And the thing is, though, it's not like she just can look at him and trap him in the bubble. Like I said, there's plenty of people around, and there's plenty of places for him to run, hide, and come back and attack her and Emma. So bottom line is Emma can't get in his head, and he's already faced Sue and fighting an invisible opponent who can send invisible projectiles at you is nothing new to him. And we will continue this on the forums.
All right. Very good. These two, I swear.
Yeah, this could go on for a while.
Yeah, it really could. It really could, especially because, yeah, well, anyway. So thank you, guys. That was awesome, and great job. Good rationales, and I'm looking forward to seeing where this goes in the forum.
Yeah, for sure. And it's important for listeners and managers to understand the circumstances under which these fighters compete. The fighters are teleported into their respective environment on opposite ends of the environment. The fighters have full disposal of any and all the resources available in the environment, and fighters are not allowed to leave the environment. But teleportation and flyers are not considered as leaving the environment. Lastly, the winners shall be determined based on the fact that he or she, in this case, has subdued their opponent's fighter. Subduing can be anything from restraining the character to killing them.
All right. Next week we have Daniel Fabrizio, who is sitting pretty low with no wins yet in the competition, and he only has Mockingbird left on his team, but he has a full array of cards: Environment Switch, Double Team, Flea, and Temporary Insanity. So he could use any one of those, and he will be facing Mr. Tom McNeely, who still has Iceman and Professor X on his team, and he has used only one card thus far, and he still has his Environment Switch, his Double Team, and his Temporary Insanity card. So the seafaring Tom McNeely will be choosing the environment as the home team. So this season we introduced a new segment to the show called the COC Power Rankings, where we take it upon ourselves to rank five characters each week in terms of who is the toughest. If you would like to submit a character to be ranked or just want to argue with us about our choices, please log in at comicattack.former.com. Tell us what you think in the COC thread labeled Power Rankings. Tonight's five nominees are... This one was a little bit... I don't know if these guys are as even. At first, I thought they were, but doing some research, it proved otherwise. But our five nominees are Falcon, Quicksilver, Hawkeye, Beast, and the Scarlet Spider, who is still in the competition, I might add. But let's see. Ian, why don't you go first, and I get the final decision, so you go first, and I'll wrap it up.
Okay. from my list from first to worst for this group of five is Quicksilver, I put first. Scarlet Spider, I put second. Then Beast, then Hawkeye, and then Falcon last. I put Quicksilver first because I think when you look at this particular group of five, I think speed kills in this group. I think Quicksilver can get the drop on any of these guys. I think the hardest for him would be to get the drop on Scarlet Spider because of his enhanced senses and speed and things like that in his own right. But ultimately, I think Quicksilver would have the upper hand on him. Scarlet Spider, I put second because he is Spider-Man only vicious. You know, no, doesn't hold back at all. Beast, I put third because he's actually a lot like Spider-Man. He's got pretty good strength. He's very underrated strength, I believe. Very agile. Maybe a little while ago I would add him higher on this list, but he doesn't seem to fight much anymore. He's more of a scientist type, you know, stay in the lab, not interested in getting his hands dirty kind of guy. Hawkeye, good ranged attacks and things, but you know what? But at the end of the day, I think any of these superpowered people can take him out. And then I put Falcon last because I think Hawkeye could take him down. I think he'd have the advantage of him. I think Falcon is somewhat one dimensional as a character.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's good. And your Quicksilver argument was a little more convincing to me than I thought. But here are my five. Number one, Scarlet Spider. Number two, Beast. Number three, Quicksilver. Number four, Hawkeye. Number five, Falcon. And the reason is, first of all, Kane is practically Spider-Man, but with no sense of really responsibility. So he's really dangerous. Now, I do think the Spider-Man could take him down, but because I feel like in the end, Spider-Man, his sense of responsibility, you know, trumps Kane's lack of. but I do think that makes Kane extremely dangerous. His invisibility, I mean, in terms of if he were fighting someone like Quicksilver, he would just go invisible, and Quicksilver would be running around trying to punch something, and what would he do? I think Kane could end up getting the drop on him. So I would rank him the highest. Beast, the guy is so smart, and you know, and that can't be discounted. I mean, the guy knows how to fight people. He knows he's got great agility, great strength. He's probably the strongest. He might be the strongest out of this group. And I would put him really close to Kane in terms of how he, you know, if he could take down these other guys. But it could be argued that he's a step above Kane. But now Quicksilver, my problem with Quicksilver is that despite his great speed, that's all he can do. He is a one-trick pony. And I remember an issue of X-Men a long time ago. I think it was drawn by one of the Q-Berts. But it was basically just Quicksilver running and clotheslining like Exodus or something like that. And I just thought it was the cheesiest way to take down an opponent was just clotheslining them at super speed. Maybe it could work. But, I mean, he's fast, but he's getting taken down by folks like Layla Miller. And Layla Miller, when she was a child, took down Quicksilver. And now you could argue, well, okay, he was depowered, okay, whatever. But still, I don't know. I think Quicksilver's pretty lame. So Hawkeye and Falcon are either not superhuman or they're just barely superhuman. So while they have great skills, I just rank them low on the list. I put Hawkeye above him just because above Falcon just because I don't know. I don't know why. Falcon is one of my least favorite characters. I think the guy is just – he sucks. And when he showed up in X-Men Legacy, I just thought, oh, God, really? This is the guy that they send to the X-Men school? I mean, give me a break. So yeah, I don't know. Depending on what – maybe Eli in speech could convince me about Quicksilver a little bit more, because I did like what you said about Quicksilver, but in my initial thoughts I was thinking he was kind of lower on the list. So, speech, how about you?
All right, it's Hawkeye, Falcon, Beast, Quicksilver, and who else?
Scarlet Spider.
Yes. Well, I would put it like I'd actually put Scarlet Spider, Beast, Quicksilver, Falcon, then Hawkeye. Mainly for the facts, all the good points you put out about Scarlet Spider and Quicksilver. I don't know. I kind of agree with you, Jeff, that he is pretty much a one trick pony. But I also think that, he could do so much more with his powers. But it always seems like that no matter what, he's getting screwed. That may be because that's how they like to write villains, or even those characters that are in gray areas. They don't, let them shine all that bright. But he pretty much does get taken out by, people like you said, Layla Miller before puberty.
Yeah.
He's done a couple of impressive things over the years, but when it comes down to it, he's not the fighter. He's not a smart fighter. He doesn't think too far ahead, which is why he gets taken out a lot. Beast. I do think that only thing Beast has to bring to the table is the agility. If he gets pissed, then yeah, he does go into like a mini blue berserker rage, but for the most part, it's Beast, and he's pretty, I won't say he's easy to take down, but I mean, he's got the normal limitations or whatnot. And when it comes down between, like, I put Falcon actually above Hawkeye, just because, Falcon, way back in the day when he was getting like a lot of, I guess, press or whatnot, or, exposure, he was doing some pretty cool things. And then he got the augmented suit and wings from the Black Panther, which kind of amped him up and gave him a better skill set. He can talk to birds, and Hawkeye. He can talk to birds, and he's utilized that very, very well. Hey, you ever been attacked by a flock of hawks, man? And come on,
not recently, no.
Yeah, see, it's a handy ability to have from what I've seen. Now, this just popped into my head when you said that Hawkeye, is a regular guy, but I don't know. Maybe later on he'll show that he's not, because remember a few issues ago in the Avengers books and all that, Hawkeye was like moving 2-ton cars without, a problem.
Well, that's just stupid.
But we don't know why, you know, so Bendis is probably like putting in something that's going to pop up later. But still, just Hawkeye now, though, he's still a guy that shoots arrows. I know everybody's on this Hawkeye trip because in the movie he was actually cool. But I mean, he's still Hawkeye, people. Let's not get it twisted.
Right.
Let's not. He's still the guy that shoots bows and arrows. And I'm sorry if it came down to him and Scarlet Spider. I pretty much think Scarlet Spider would take him out. I actually think Quicksilver would just run up, pop him in the face. That would be it.
Yeah.
He'd have a problem with all of these guys.
Right.
So.
All right, Eli, what's your five?
I had Quicksilver at the top because of his speed. Then I had Scarlet Spider. And Scarlet Spider is a character on this list that I know the least about. I don't think I've ever read an issue with Scarlet Spider. Maybe one ever. But I mean, from everything that's been talked about with him in these competitions and what you guys were just saying, maybe he could give Quicksilver a run for his money.
He took out the queen in Spider Island. That's pretty good.
Right. I don't think Quicksilver's
Oh, you need to go back and read that.
It was actually fun.
I only read the Deadly Hands of Kung Fu mini.
Oh, okay. All right.
Which was awesome.
It was really good. Okay.
Sorry. All right. Well, maybe so. Anyway, but I had Scarlet Spider 2, basically just from what all of you have said. And Dan, Pervy Dan there. Beast, as much as I hate him and the fact that some folks think he could beat up Fat Cobra, which is ridiculous, I have him number 3.
But he could.
He's really strong.
But you know
he could not.
Yeah, he could.
He can't. There's
no way.
We're not going to get into that argument. We're not going to get into that argument because I can take all night. All I know is that.
Thank you, speech.
Fat Cobra is just drunk on the floor, and Beast is like, you know, sitting on top of him. But that's me.
Anyway, Beast is too strong and agile and vicious for Hawkeye and Falcon. So he's number 3.
Yeah.
But he's a distant 3rd from the top 2. And then I have Hawkeye because he has a ranged attack. I mean, he is halfway capable. The movie made him look cooler than I ever thought he was, but I still think he could take Falcon. But I think it's close between him and Falcon. Falcon doesn't have any ranged attacks other than the birds. And, I mean, Jeff, you need to go rent Hitchcock's The Birds.
Yeah.
I mean, just regular, what were they, seagulls?
I think I saw it a long time ago. Yeah.
What's he have? His little buddy named Red, is it?
Redwing.
His Falcon?
Redwing.
Oh, I mean, that thing would tear you up.
I'm a little bit afraid of birds. So.
Are you?
That's one bird that's been through a lot. He's dodged laser fire, bullet from Hydra agents. That's one serious bird right there.
All right.
That same bird he still has?
He's the stupid bird that kept leading Avengers to Cable to take out.
Oh, that was hilarious.
Stupid bird.
That's
quit following that bird.
But I've always liked Falcon. I mean, at the same time that I kind of like him, I see how ridiculous his character kind of is sometimes, but I like him. Right. So I think him and Hawkeye are close. I think that might even be a 50-50 split. I just think Hawkeye may have a slightly better advantage at the ranged attacks.
Yeah.
And I've never seen Falcon just send like a horde or a flock of birds at somebody. I mean, I know he could, right? But I've never seen it.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Well, according to our new little calculations and point system, Scarlet Spider gets the most points with 18, and followed by Quicksilver, Beast at 14. Quicksilver was at 16. Hawkeye at 7, and Falcon at 5. And so that puts them in a little bit of a different order. So where I put them in the overall list is, and you know, I like this point system, so I think I will switch Scarlet Spider and Quicksilver. Beast and Quicksilver. I'll switch them because I liked what you guys had to say about him. And
I'm just glad nobody said, well, he was trained by Captain America. Captain America's trained a lot of people. It doesn't mean that they're all top-notch fighters.
Right. So I will Let's see. Hold on a second. I will put Scarlet Spider, Quicksilver, and Beast. Just below Captain America, but above Wrecker from the Wrecking Crew on the overall list. And I'm going to put Hawkeye and Falcon pretty low on the list. I'm going to put them underneath Luke Cage, but above Blob. So I think they could take out Blob pretty easily, both of these guys. But Luke Cage, despite the fact that he only has steel skin or whatever that is, I do think that he would...
Really? Because he's got superhuman strength in there as well.
Well, I know, but, you know...
He's got thunderclap strength, right?
Well, yeah.
But he's low on the list. I'm just telling you.
Because part of your list is inaccurate. So,
well,
I mean...
That's because that's the part that Ian did, so... So, yeah. Anyway. So that's where I put those guys, so... So that's our show. Thanks everybody for listening to episode number 32 of COC Live. And you can go to comicattack.former.com under COC to vote for who you think is the most deserving to win in tonight's fight. And if you have any questions that you'd like answered, please send them to us in the thread called Ask the COCers. We are getting kind of low on our questions, so it's about time for Moses or Dan or somebody to throw in another question. And we would, of course, love to see tons of people discussing this fight along with Eli and Gid on the forum, so please do that. And also, you can look for us on Twitter. Follow us there at COC Comic Attack. And you can also follow us on Facebook. Go and search for Contest of Champions, and you can find us there. And also go to iTunes, leave us a review for that. We still only have one review over the entire time that we've been doing this show. So even you guys need to go on there and put a review on there. Can you do that? Just go to iTunes, write a review, say, "Hey, this is my favorite podcast." That's all you got to say. Yeah, so there you go.
All right, we record every Sunday evening at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, so be sure to get your votes in before then. After some top-notch editing work by Jeff, the fight's posted and ready for listening the following Tuesday, usually by the following Tuesday. Thanks to Eli and Speech for joining us tonight, and thanks, Jeff, for everything. And most of all, thanks for all the listeners out there who download our show and listen to our show. And from all of us at COC, have a great week.
Have a great week.
Let's get ready to rumble. Contest champion. It's the
I have Sierra Mist.
I have rum in my Sierra Mist.
The feminine version of Sprite.
Yeah, it does have a girly name, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Sierra Mist.
Come into the stage to work that pole for your enjoyment.
It does sound like that.
Give Sierra Mist a hand, fellas. She'll be back at 2:15 and 2:45.
Okay, you know way too much about that.
Get your dollar, she'll make you holler. 24 lap dance. Yep, she'll put you in a trance. Oh, yeah, Sierra Mist.
By the way, I'm recording already, so.
Nice.